the chapter starts out, these are the journeys of Bnei Israel. The Torah says that Moshe Rabbeinu recorded these journeys, and it describes what he did as that he wrote, Vayichtov Moshe es motzoeihem lemaaseihem. He wrote they're going out, motzoeihem lemaaseihem, they're going out to their journeys, and these are the journeys according to their going out. So it changes the order. Here it says going out and then journeys. Here it says journeys and going out. Okay. Say that there were two ideas, two purposes to these 42 journeys. One purpose was to get far away from Egypt. Not necessarily geographically, but in spirit. To take the Egypt out of the Jewish people, not just to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. Mm. And the second was to get to Eretz Israel. And there also, there was a geographic idea. And there the geographic idea was the main one, to get physically to Eretz Israel. But also to prepare themselves and get closer and closer to the ideas of Eretz Israel as they journeyed. And for that they needed 40 years in the desert to prepare themselves, because of the sins they did, to be able to go into Eretz Israel. So that is the idea. In the beginning, one second, and that's why there are 42 journeys. And the Sfarim say they correspond to the 42 letters of God's name. There's a 42 letter God's name. And these journeys represent each one a different letter of that 42 lettered name. Now, the 42 letters of God's name are split up, according to one opinion at least, into 7 6-letter combinations. So the name of God of 42 letters, and you are familiar with that name, because it's contained in the prayer Ana Bekoach. Ana Bekoach Gdulas Yemincha Tatu Tzrura. There are 6 words, right? And there are 7 combinations of them, right? And the first letters of those words, Ono, Bekoa, Gedulas, Yemincho, Tatu, Trura, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Yud, Tov, Tzadik, those are the letters, 6 letters of the first combination of God's name, and there's 7 different combinations. That's the 42 letter. So I was thinking that the idea is 7 times 6. That is how it's broken up. 7 combinations of 6 letters each. What is the idea? 7 times 6. 7 is a complete unit of time. 7 days of creation. 6 is a complete idea of space, place. 4 directions and up and down. 6. 6 represents place. 7 represents time. And therefore, these 42 masos represented getting away in place from Egypt. And time to be able to get the Egypt out of the Jew, and coming close to Eretz Israel in place and in time to prepare. By coming close to Eretz Israel, the main thing was the place, even though time put a factor in also. Getting out of Egypt, the main thing was not place, right? In other words, it wasn't an idea of getting as far away from Egypt as you could, but time-wise, as much as you could distance yourself from what Egypt represented. And therefore, in the beginning, when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down, as they were traveling, each journey, the main thing they saw was getting away from Egypt. They didn't see yet getting close to Eretz Israel, right? They could appreciate why each journey took them a little bit farther away from Eretz Israel, from Mitzrayim. But once they came to the end of the journeys, they were able to look back and see not only how it took them away from Mitzrayim, but how it brought them closer to their goal, because now they had reached the goal, they could see how it fit in to the goal of coming to Eretz Israel. So therefore the Torah first says, Moshe Rabbeinu recorded their going out, according to their journey, because the main thing they were focusing on is getting away from Mitzrayim. Once they reached the goal and were ready to enter Eretz Yisrael, he then looked at it in a different perspective, how these journeys were, what's it called, were there for the purpose of the journey to Eretz Yisrael based on where they went from. So in the beginning, the main thing was going out. In the end, the main thing was going, journeying in to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Okay. It's interesting that there are many ideas given why the Torah recorded for us. What do I care if there are 42 journeys and where they were or whatever? So many different ideas. The Rambam says an idea, a very simple idea, that wants to remind us of how much miraculous where the Jews were in the desert, because you could think maybe they were just on the periphery of the desert and there was all the amenities of life, that mentions these journeys to tell us that they were deep in the desert and they had to live on miracles. That's a Rambam. But there's two other ideas that I want to mention that bring out this idea. We're saying now that there is an idea of getting away from Mitzrayim in these journeys. Each one affected another level of getting the Egypt out of the Jewish people and preparing them to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. Those are the two purposes. Then, according to that, it's interesting, there are two opinions of why the Torah records these journeys, and each one represents a different aspect that we mention. According to the Uraim, the prohibition of returning to Egypt, we're not allowed to return to Egypt, is only if we go back the same way we came out. In other words, going back to Egypt is going back the same route. So the Torah had to tell us the route so we know how not to go back. If we ever go back to Egypt, we're not allowed to go that way. So that represents the idea of not going back to Egypt, getting far away from Egypt and not going back there. So that was one purpose of the journeys. Like we said, the going out to the journey, main thing, getting away from Egypt. The second reason why these are is it says in the future the Jewish people will go back into the desert before Mashiach comes and retrace this route to Eretz Yisrael. Now, it doesn't have to mean necessarily physically, but it means that we're going to go through the same things in preparing. There, it's not going away from Egypt, right? Just the opposite. It says the Jews in Israel are going to go out, but it's a preparation for coming to Eretz Yisrael. We need those 42 stations again in preparation. So you see, these two ideas represent both things. One, the idea of getting away from Egypt, not returning there, and the other one is in the future, it'll be a preparation to come back to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Mashiach. So it echoes these two ideas, two reasons why the 42 journeys are mentioned. Now in the Haftorah of this week's Sedra, it says the following: Shnayim Ro'os Osu Ami. Klal Yisrael did two bad things. Osi Ozovu, they left me, they abandoned me, God said, and they went and dug wells that don't produce any water, meaning, and they went after idolatry, which has no purpose. The two bad things. One is they abandoned me. Had they abandoned me and not gone after other idolatry, would have been bad enough. But not only they abandoned me, but they went after ridiculous, meaningless Avodah Zarah. Two things. So you see the same idea here also, right? We have an idea, the opposite. Here we're trying to get away from Egypt and come to Eretz Yisrael. Here the Jewish people did the opposite. They went away from God and went close to Avodah Zarah. Same concept, only the mirror image, the opposite. Going away. Here we're trying to go away from Mitzrayim and come close to God in Eretz Yisrael. Here they went away from God and came close to idolatry. And that's why the mourning for the Beis HaMikdash is an inverted order of mourning. As normally, mourning is somebody dies and you begin to mourn intensely and then you dissipate the mourning. The first 7 days is intense, then till the end of 30 days, then till the end of the year. It goes lesser and lesser. Here is just the opposite. We build up to the mourning. We start with the 3 weeks, then the 9 days, then Shavua Shechal Bal Tisha B'Av, the week of Tisha B'Av, then Erev Tisha B'Av, and the morning gets increases greater and greater. Why is it the opposite? Why didn't the rabbis make that we should start mourning for the Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av, and then have a Shiva after that? We sit Shiva for the Beis HaMikdash every year, and then to finish off, Shloshim, go down. Why do they do it the opposite way? Right? So, because it mirrors, it echoes what we did wrong. We went away from God, and we got closer to idolatry. So now when we mourn for the Beis HaMikdash, we get farther away from a normal life, slowly. They didn't abandon God quickly either. It happened slowly. So they slowly went away from God and came to Avodah Zarah. Same thing over here. We slowly go away from normal life, right? A normal life. We don't get married. We don't dance and sing. We don't take haircuts. That's slowly. And then more, we get away from normal life. We don't eat meat, drink wine, don't wear freshly washed clothing, and so on. More and more. Until finally, we go the opposite. Instead of coming close to God, what's it called, the opposite, going away from Egypt and coming close to God in Eretz Israel, they did the opposite. They went away from God slowly and attached themselves to Avodah Zarah, which is like death. So it says that we slowly go away from normal life, because life is having a connection to God. And the more that you go away from God, the more you're going away from life. Until if you attach yourself to Avodah Zarah, your mamash like dead. Avodah Zarah is considered like death. So that's how the Avelis is. We slowly go away from a normal life until on Tisha B'Av it's mamash like being dead. There's another reason. The more that they got closer and closer to idolatry, the more God brought difficulties and tragedies and perennials and different kinds of tzoras on them, right? In order to make them do tshuva, right? And the idea is not because God wanted to hurt us, but the more that we got closer and closer to that death of suicide, God wanted to shock us to rehabilitate us. Right, he says that's what the rabbis say, that God took out His anger on sticks and stones, and not on the Jewish people. Meaning that He, instead of punishing us, He shocked us into a situation that maybe we'll be able to be rehabilitated. Right, so every year we go through that again. So as we get farther and farther away from the Ribbono Shel Olam and closer and closer to this Avodah Zarah, we need more and more things to awaken us and in order that we can be rehabilitated. Right? And that's what it says. When the Ribbono Shel Olam threw us into Golus, He didn't do it because He hates us or is disgusted with us. The Torah says, Lo ma'astim afgam zos biyosim be'eretz oyveihem. Even when you're in the land of your enemies, Lo ma'astim, v'lo ga'altim. I didn't hate you. I wasn't disgusted with you. I don't want to destroy you, right? And abrogate my covenant with you. Ki ani Hashem, I'm doing it because if I don't do this and I don't give you all these tzoras or whatever, then you will, what you call, keep on that path, and you'll end up committing spiritual suicide. Okay, just like give you a marshal, which is going to be hard for you to relate to, but it's a good marshal. Many nations committed spiritual suicide. The rise and fall of the Roman Empire. They reached a certain level of decadence, and spiritually, they destroyed themselves. So they disappeared from history. They became to the history books. Happened to the Babylonians, the Persians, the Romans, right? Many nations, just the Assyrians, they don't exist anymore. And the Jewish people could have done the same thing. We were on a suicide path, spiritual suicide, that had we continued on that path without anything stopping us, then we would also disappear into history. But God won't let that happen to the Jewish people, because Lo Yitosh Hashem Amo, God will not abandon the Jewish people, right? V'nachlosu Lo Yezav, He won't leave us, and therefore He gives us free choice. but at a point where he sees that we're going on a path that's going to lead us to oblivion, he intercedes, and he does things drastic in order to put us back. So that's what it means. He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. He shocked us, put us into Golus, like in a hospital. The Chafetz Chaim says Golus is like a hospital. It's not a great place to be, but if you're sick, it's a good place to be to recuperate. And the Rabban Shom said, okay, I'm throwing you out of Eretz Yisrael, taking away the Beis HaMikdash. One thing it had to do is that if you didn't appreciate the Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael when you were here, and you lived as if these things didn't exist anyway, and you abused them, I'm going to take them away from you, and you'll have a tremendous desire to get them back. Maybe then you'll appreciate them, and then it's possible you'll get them back with an appreciation. And also, you wanted to live like all the Goyim? Fine. Let's take a tour of the world for the next 2,000 years, and you're going to see all the Goyim. See if you want to live like them. Right? This is what you want to be. Right? You want to be people who use their children as human shields? Fine. You want to be like that? Fine. You want to be, what's it called? Right? Go around the world, take a look, close look at all the Goyim. Let me know which one you'd like to be like, and then, what's it called? Then maybe you can come back to Eretz Yisrael and feel happy to live like Jews. So, the example I always like to give, the marshal, is the following. Imagine a super brat, a 5-year-old who is a real brat, but he's super strong. And his greatest pastime is to run into the street and play chicken with cars and trucks. He makes faces at them, runs in front of them, and taunts them, and then just as they're ready to hit him, he runs out of the way. And he doesn't understand how serious that is, because he watches television and watches movies, and he sees that people get hit by cars and they're on the show next week. So nothing's going to happen. And his mother tries to explain to him that this is not very safe and it's very dangerous, and nothing helps. She tried, you know, modern methods of education. They sat down and discussed how they feel about getting hit by a truck, and that didn't help. And then she tried some more conventional methods of education. She yelled at the kid and warned him that he's going to be punished if he runs in the street again, and that didn't help. And then she, you know, locked him in his room for a while and told him to, is he taking away all of his candy, and that didn't help. And then she decided to hit him, and that didn't help. And nothing helped. And finally, one day she's walking with the child on the side of the highway, and there's a 16-wheeler coming down the highway 150 miles an hour, and the kid is pulling away, and he's super strong, and she can't hold on to him. And she knows that if she does nothing, the child is going to pull away, run in front of this truck, and there's no way that he won't be hit. That's it. If he pulls away and runs into the street, this is the last time he will ever do this. She has an iron pole in her other hand. She has two choices, and only two choices, because I made up the marshal, and there are no other choices. So don't start arguing with me as mothers or women, right, that, no, well, there's no other possibility. There's two possibilities. She lets him run into the street, or she breaks his legs.
Oh, okay.
Okay, breaks his legs. He won't run into the street if he has broken legs. It'll take him 6 months to recuperate, and he'll be in a lot of pain. If you're a mother and you love your child, what would you do? Break his legs. Because if you don't break his legs, you won't have a child. Okay? And will it hurt the mother? 100%. Will it be very traumatic for her? Yes. But is that what, if you love your child, that's what you'll do? That's what the Rebbe Shom did. We're on a suicide mish path. And if God did nothing, then that was it. We would have disappeared into history like other nations. So he broke our legs. It was hard for him. Right? It hurt him as much as it hurts us, if not more. He broke the code, destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, threw us into Golus, but now there's a chance that we'll recuperate. It may take 1,000, 2,000 years, but eventually we'll come back. So that is the idea. So that's why they did two things. They left Hashem and they went to the Avodah Zarah. As they left Hashem, right, they left a normal life more and more until they attach themselves to death. That's exactly how we mourn. We leave the normal life little gradually until Tisha B'Av we come. It's like a day of death. That's how the mourning echoes what happened. And this two ideas again. Just like by Mitzrayim. They left Mitzrayim to come to Eretz Yisrael. Here we're leaving the opposite. We're leaving Hashem to come to Avodah Zorah, the antithesis of that. And therefore, as we build up towards Tisha B'Av, it's to feel that Zorah again, to feel that God didn't, you know, the mother doesn't break the kid's legs right away. She waits till there's no other option. This is the last resort. So too, the Rabbanu Shalom did a million things. He sent us Nevi'im, and he yelled at us, and he hit us, and he gave us a patch, and nothing worked until the end was that he had to break our legs. So we go that gradual path again every year. We go start with Asara B'Teves, and we get, what's it called, we relive the siege of Yerushalayim. If we get the message, right, and we stop running in the street, so we wouldn't have to get to the next stage. We didn't learn a lesson. Next thing is that the Goyim broke through the walls. If we got the message, we wouldn't have to come to the 9 days. Finally, the 9 days, the week of Tisha B'Av, Erev Tisha B'Av, Tisha B'Av is breaking the legs. And every year we go through that process again, because every generation where the Beis HaMikdash isn't built, it's like it was destroyed. Because if the reason for it not be for it being destroyed wouldn't exist, it would be built. So that is, and this year also, it's maybe a little bit easier to feel the tzaras, because we have other tzaras that... that every day to hear more soldiers that are killed, and more people that are, you know, delegated to bomb shelters or whatever, and then people who are harmed or whatever. So the more that we feel that Golus is not a great thing, and here in Eretz we're also Golus, no Beis HaMikdash or whatever, we're in a different Golus, maybe a sweeter Golus, but still the tzaras of Golus and wars or whatever, which won't exist when Mashiach comes, are still around. And that's why it says, when you are mourning for Yerushalayim, it says that you merit to see the Simcha. Not you will merit in the future, but right now. The idea being the following, that if we mourn and we understand why we're mourning, the mourning is because we drifted away from the Rabbanu Shalom towards Avodah Zorah, and we get more, we become, there's another purpose of mourning. It says that mourning is to make a statement that something is missing, right? If somebody dies and you go back to business as usual right after the death, then you're basically saying this person made no difference. So it's irrelevant that he's not here, because whether he's here or not here, everything goes on normally. So when you mourn, you make a statement that I can't go back to life as usual because this person's missing. It's an honor for the person who's dead. You're making a statement that the person was important, and his absence makes a difference. That's an honor to the deceased. In addition, by mourning, it says that the neshama goes through a difficult transition period, and the relatives want to commiserate, empathize. So they go through a difficult period also during this time to commiserate with the neshama. Because misery loves company. So the neshama feels good that the family is suffering along with it, and feels the pain that it's going through in becoming acclimated to it, its new world in the spiritual world. It's difficult to go from a spiritual world to a physical world, just like it's difficult to come from the spiritual world into this physical world. Right. Babies need to be hit to start breathing, and they cry when they come into this world. It's a difficult transition. So the mourning is to get away from the niceties of the physical world. You don't wash, you don't wear shoes, you don't go out for 7 days, and you become more attuned to the spiritual world, and that way you can empathize with the neshama, what it's going through. So same thing over here this morning. Once a year, we make a statement that not everything is right because there's no Beis HaMikdash. We can't live our lives normally because we abandoned God and went towards this Avodah Zorah, which resulted in the Beis HaMikdash. We basically went away from normal life. So we stop our normal life slowly. You stop getting married and taking haircuts, and little by little you increase it and realize that that the more that you distance yourself from the Rabbanu Shalom and attach yourself to other things, the more you don't have a normal life. The more you distance yourself from life and going to death. That's one thing. The second thing is we become more spiritual, and we become, what's it called, more aware of the fact that the Beis HaMikdash isn't destroyed. It's not final. It's all for the sake of getting it back, of being rehabilitated. So God just put the Beis HaMikdash in escrow. It says the walls sunk in the ground. They weren't destroyed. And there's a spiritual Beis HaMikdash which exists. So if you become aware of that spiritual Beis HaMikdash, you right away merit to see what's missing. Not that you'll see the Simcha, and you'll understand what the Simcha will be when it comes back. Because you're now aware of the spiritual Beis HaMikdash and you understand what's missing. And that in itself is a Simcha. It says that there were two Chayalim who had just come from Russia after the Six-Day War. And they were assigned to guard the Kosel. And that was the time right after the Six-Day War when everybody was coming after 20 years of not being able to be by the Kosel. Mamish coming back and pouring out their hearts by the Kosel. And these two Russian soldiers knew nothing about religion. Right? And they looked bewildered. You know, what are these people crying by this wall? And all of a sudden, one of them burst out crying. So the other one said, look, I know why these religious Jews are crying, because this wall means something to them. But you have no idea of what is going on. Why are you crying? He said, that's why I'm crying, because I don't know what's going on. That's the worst thing. So if you begin to see what's there to cry about, you begin to feel that there's something missing, that in itself is a simcha. Zoche v'roe v'simchosa, it's a little bit of a comfort to know at least what you're crying about. In addition, it says that the fact that we can continue mourning so long shows that it's not complete. It's not finished. Because when something is finished, you have closure and you stop mourning. It says there's a special gzeirah, a special decree that the deceased should be forgotten from the heart after 12 months. After that, you know, time heals and you get used to it, you make closure and you stop mourning emotionally, totally, and you begin to put it into the realm of the rational, intellectual, and not totally emotional. Right? So it takes a year to get to that level. And at that level already, you stop mourning intensely. By a year already, time does its... So if that's the case, they ask, how did Yaakov Avinu continue mourning for Yosef for 22 years? The answer they say is very simple. He wasn't dead. Only the decree only applies to somebody who's dead when it's finished. And therefore, how do we continue mourning for the Beis HaMikdash for thousands of years? If it would be finished, it would be dead, then we couldn't continue mourning. Must be that it's not dead. It's not finished. That it's just a matter of time until we're rehabilitated. So that in itself gives a tremendous simcha, if you understand that. They tell the story that Napoleon heard some crying and wailing coming from a building. He went in to investigate. And he sees all these Jews sitting on the floor crying. He asked them, what's the problem? He said, well, our temple was destroyed. He said, where was your temple? He said, in Jerusalem. He said, one second. He goes out and he goes to his head of intelligence, officer of intelligence. He says, listen, did you hear of any temple being destroyed in Jerusalem lately? He said, no. He said, could you check on it just to make sure? So he checks. And he comes back and he says, we have no information of any temple in Jerusalem being destroyed. Goes back and said, good news for you guys. My officer, chief of intelligence, said that there has been no temple destroyed lately in Jerusalem. You've got a false report. You can get up. He said, no, you don't understand. The temple was destroyed almost 2,000 years ago. He said, you're sitting on the floor crying for a temple that was destroyed 2,000 years ago. People who can cry for 2,000 years for a temple deserve to have it rebuilt. Mm-hmm. So that's also part of that simcha. And that's why also the idea of avelus goes slowly. You build up going away from a normal life until you come on Tisha B'Av where you feel like you're dead. And that's what Klal Yisrael did. Just like by Mitzrayim, the opposite. We went slowly away from Mitzrayim towards life, towards Eretz Yisrael, which is called the Eretz Achayim. When we left Eretz Yisrael, right, we slowly went away from the Rabbanu Shel Olam, not away from Mitzrayim, just the opposite, away from God, until we attached ourselves to Avodah Zorah and Mamash like death. So the mourning period, right, represents that process. So, Mirza Hashem, if we go through this period, and we feel these things, and we feel how much going away from the Rabbanu Shalom and attaching ourselves to other things is not much like death, slowly. And then we feel that death in the morning, and not having a normal life, and depriving ourselves of things that are normal life, right? So the order is, you have 3 weeks to build up to Tisha B'Av, right? To leave your normal life slowly and come to Tisha B'Av where you feel mamish like you're dead. 3 weeks, why? Because 7 days, like we said, is a full unit of time. Three times something is a chazakah, and you do it three times. So we go 3 weeks of building up towards feeling that life is not normal without a Beis HaMikdash, and leaving God and attaching yourself to other things is like death, which is like Tisha B'Av. So you build up to that feeling on Tisha B'Av. Now you need to internalize it. So you need another 3 weeks, another 21 days, 7 times 3. Go through three periods of 7 days, and that culminates with Rosh Chodesh Elul. Rosh Chodesh Elul starts the process of tshuva that culminates on Yom Kippur. So that's the process over here. Build up to Tisha B'Av, right? And then internalize it, and then start the process to tshuva, and then you'll be able to reverse the process. Instead of going away from Hashem and coming to Avodah Zarah, you'll do like they did over there. Go away from Mitzrayim and come closer to Eretz Yisrael. Leave the Mitzrayim and come closer to the Rabbanu Shalom is the opposite of that process. And that's what's it called. You'll do tshuva, you'll return. And that's how what's it called, all of these tzaras will be alleviated and corrected. And that's why the kinos on Tisha B'Av is a lashon of kinyan. You're acquiring something. And it also has the same letters as tikkun. It corrects something, and has the same letters as tinok. You become like you're able to become a newborn person and reverse the process and start again. So Mirza Hashem, if we understand the process and we take it to heart and we feel it, right, and then Mirza Hashem will be able to go back, like it said, instead of the process of leaving God and coming to Avodah Zarah, we'll leave Mitzrayim, leave the Avodah Zarah, and come closer to the Rabbanu Shalom, like it says, before Mashiach comes, we're going to go back in the desert and retrace these 42 steps of getting closer to Eretz Yisrael, closer to the Rabbanu Shalom. That should happen very quickly.
Yeah. One thing really troubles me, and maybe I don't understand correctly. If I remember, I had learned that during the 3 weeks, you're not supposed to have surgery, you're not supposed to do anything that's really dangerous.
And that's
correct.
Yes and no. Mostly that's during the 9 days. But even during the 3 weeks, it says that a person shouldn't hit his children, what's it called, in a way that during the 3 weeks, because dangerous things they are more dangerous during this time. But during the 9 days is more specific.
Okay. The reason that troubles me has to do
with this war now.
Yeah.
Okay, we didn't ask for it.
I know.
Yeah.
And it'd
be much more dangerous if we didn't do this something.
Okay.
Right. Much more dangerous. We see now. I mean, it's really to the credit, if you can say such a thing, of these three korbanos. Those three boys, had they not been kidnapped and killed and woken up, and they didn't start doing something, and because of that it generated the reaction, we never would have known about these, and it was just a matter of time until they would have wreaked havoc here, and there's nothing we could have done. So to a certain degree it's a bracha, right? A bracha that's unfortunately a very bitter bracha, but it's a bracha.
But it was something that was on my mind.
Right, I hear. Yeah. This is not the greatest time in the year to wage a war.
Okay.
But once it was necessary, right, then, in other words, like this. Let me give Mamish the example. Let's say somebody, Rahman al-Islam, had a massive heart attack during the 9 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, even on Tisha B'Av. What do you say? Well, it's not good to have surgery during this time.
Right.
Wait,
right?
Time. Yeah, right, right,
time.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You better have surgery, or you're not going to make it past Tisha B'Av, right? So that's the example.
Understood. But I just wanted to raise it with you.
Yeah.